Hello and welcome to the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm Tim Nash, a beekeeper always wanting to learn more and also the man behind the Paddock Bees account on Instagram. This is a podcast for those who've fallen into the beekeeping trap and want to learn a little bit more from the beekeeping community. Each week, we'll mix up the guests and provide some insights into the world of beekeeping. So sit tight and we'll soon make a start. Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm delighted to be joined by Craig, the secret beekeeper. Come and join us on this episode where we'll hear about winter losses, flow hives and much more of Craig's journey and experiences. Craig, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Tim.
Let's go back to the beginning. When did you start beekeeping? And what got you initially interested in keeping bees?
I have been beekeeping since 2019. And I'd say what got me interested is whilst I was at work in 2011, we had a swarm of bees fly in and landed in a hedge nearby. And it was such a rush and like adrenaline Yeah, it just sort of sparked an interest. A seed was sown, if you like.
Started your beekeeping in 2019. What's your current colony count?
Current colony count is 4 colonies. I did have 15 going into winter, but unfortunately due to someone tampering with a few and also my own fault, I'm down to 4.
I think that's an interesting point there just to jump on. And I know that we've got a number of other questions that we typically go through. And it's a good eye-opener for a number of people that it's not just the case of you've got these colonies and the colonies, you're going to guarantee that they survive the winter. So what did you put those losses down to?
I think with me, I caught a lot of swarms. And I'd done a few splits. To be fair, the splits weren't so bad, but the swarms, especially the late ones, I think they were so small, I should have really combined them, or I just don't feel that they were big enough to survive. And I think starvation, isolation was probably the reason for the majority of it.
So late swarm, did you pick those ones up in July then?
There was 4 that were late swarms, and I honestly thought that feeding them and them having enough food in the hive would be enough. But I think if they were sort of clustered in, and they couldn't move and reach out to what was available around them, that's all I can really put it down to.
Isolation, starvation, for those who might not know, beekeepers will often leave honey on the beehive for the bees for the winter. Alternatively, they will feed them. Either way, they're going to have stores packed away for winter. And what can happen, the bees don't realize that they've got food pretty much right next to them. And so therefore, they just start dwindling rather than using those resources. So often a beekeeper can do everything right. They've fed them enough, they've given them enough food, but sometimes the bees just won't find it. And if they don't find it, the numbers dwindle too much, they can't keep the heat there, and they eventually they will die out. In terms of uniting the colonies, is that something that you think you'll take into your beekeeping this year then, if you do get some of those late swarms again?
100%. Yeah, my sort of goal this season is to ensure that they're sort of big enough, that I absolutely have done everything I can to ensure they survive. I think if uniting the colonies together, although I lose a queen, the bees will have a better chance to get through, rather than thinking I'm going to have 2 more colonies next spring. You've got to think about the bees first, not about, you know, how many hives you've got or what honey you might produce, or yeah.
one colony of bees is better than a loss of two colonies of bees, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%. It's the reason why we do it, really, is because we want to help the bees. And if you're not, I think I sort of thought I knew enough and more than what I actually did. And as a result of that, the only ones that suffered were the bees. And yeah, I felt quite terrible about that, to be honest.
Even if you talk to experienced beekeepers, they'll still say that they're still learning and there's still so much to learn, isn't it? The more you beekeep, the more you realize how little you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm a member of numerous groups on Facebook, and one of them being the Sussex Beekeepers. And the amount of people that have had losses, it sort of did take the blame, but I didn't feel as bad because there were so many losses in the area.
If we take your 15 colonies, you mentioned that there's a few swarms and splits. Was that your method last year to increase your stock?
Yeah, absolutely. After I'd designed labels, got jars, got the honey, it was such a buzz. And part of what I enjoyed about it was the sort of not communicating, but yeah, meeting people, selling the honey, the local honey. And it just, I don't know, I felt if I could do that more and not just sell out so quick, it would be, yeah, more beneficial. But then that was to me again, rather than the bees.
And what type of hives have you got, or did you have those colonies in?
Well, it all started with a flow hive initially, because where I lived before, I didn't have the space to have all the extracting equipment, and I came across the flow hive, and I thought that was perfect. And then I'd done a split from that quite early on. And then it was swarms, going to catch swarms. I actually had a nuc gifted to me by a local beekeeper. I'd done a cutout as well, actually, in my first year, second year, sorry. Now, the only one I've done and probably will ever do because I got covered in honey. It wasn't a great experience.
And dimensions, I know when we've been talking before, you seem to have a big array of different formats, kind of word polys. Where are you at the moment?
I have the flow hive, which is a Langstroth hive. It's an 8-frame hive, so quite small. I also have the 8-frame Langstroths by Bello. They're poly hives. I have Payne's nucs, which are also eight frames. I made a top bar hive from a barrel, cut that in half. And constructed that, and they're still going okay.
I clocked the top bar hive and I thought that was really interesting. Was that, did you see that somewhere else or was that your idea?
I saw that on a Facebook page. Someone had done the same thing in America. I think the climate over there favours that sort of material using a barrel because they're 3 mil thick. I didn't account for the insulation, but thankfully the bees were okay through the first winter, and then I've insulated it since then, and they're still thriving, so I was happy with that.
I was wondering about the insulation because even on a wooden beehive, people will top up the insulation. The poly hives are known to be pretty good on that, but a 3 mil piece of plastic, I don't think is going to rate very well on the insulation scale.
No, absolutely. And it was I posted a picture of the comb on the top bar, and someone commented and said, the comb is built on the side the sun hits, which it was, and that was because they were making the most of the sun warming that side and only building on that side.
I know you had two of those barrel hives as well. What happened to one of the other ones?
Yes, unfortunately, I went to do an inspection, and two of the bars had been sort lifted off slightly. I thought it was quite strange, but I put it down to foxes or, someone just coming across and wondering what they are. So I left it another 2 weeks and I went back and one of them had gone. So someone had stolen one of my top bar hives.
Absolutely crazy. Was it somewhere off the beaten track, or where had you those ones been positioned?
It was on a golf club that I worked at the time, quite off the beaten track, I'd say. There was a football path nearby, but only accessible from the golf club. So it was quite unfortunate. I thought it was safe, but obviously it wasn't. And I think my concern for the future as well with out apiaries is, yeah, security, and it's quite a worry. When I had four or five hives tampered with the straps taken off and the lids thrown off, and then we had a load of rain and then frost and then freezing, so I lost those colonies. So, yeah, I think security and apiary placement and choice is quite vital.
I asked the questions because I'm currently going through that at the moment. I'm having to relocate the three hives that I've got, and went round, looked at five different sites, and yeah, factoring all of that in, what's in sight from the road or from a footpath, and which ones are the most tucked away but still give you some good accessibility, all of those things that you need to factor into siting your hives if you can't have them nearby.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's so vital. Every colony that I had is now here in my garden. Thankfully, my partner's quite understanding, but they can't stay, unfortunately.
My wife's understanding, my neighbours aren't so much. That's my predicament at the moment.
Oh yeah, so you do have to kind of, yeah, you kind of, but you've got to think about your relationship with your neighbours.
You've had a pretty eventful journey considering you started beekeeping in 2019. What have you most enjoyed about it?
I think the connection, or be it false connection, because the bees do remind me that with a sting now and again, I am invading them. But yeah, I feel sort of connection to nature. I like to think that I'm, helping and doing what I can, although this year has been a kick into reality.
And what's been your best experience so far in your beekeeping?
The best. Most probably exciting would be when I'd where the beehives were on my previous job, I could have my lunch and sit in the apiary, and I was about to have a bite into a sandwich, and my nuke box suddenly exploded and swarmed. It was quite an experience. So then I had to wait for them to settle, catch them, and sort of put them in a hive. All in my lunch break, which was quite a task, to be fair.
And you had all the right gear with you?
I didn't actually. I had a cardboard box, quite a rickety ladder, and they did go quite high up into a hedge, but I did manage it in the end.
How about your funniest story?
Probably the extraction I'd done. In a loft, somebody's loft, and they were having the loft converted, and they said I could come and make a mess. Doesn't matter about the mess, and I thought it was a great opportunity to experience an extraction of a colony. And so I got there and set up and started. I managed to remove all the plaster and start cutting out the bees, but where I didn't sort of take into account where the nest might go behind the wall, I didn't take a tall enough ladder, and in the end, I had honey dripping through my veil all over me, and it was very unpleasant, to be fair. But I did catch the bees, and they did make it.
And was that a summer extraction as well?
Yes, it was. So the honey was quite runny.
Runny honey, sweaty
Yeah.
suit. That sounds like a delightful afternoon.
And I think that was when I said I'd probably never do it again. That would be the reason why. I experienced it and I'm glad I did, but I didn't have the equipment.
So we've heard a bit about kind of the 2020 season, but how would you summarize it overall?
The honey crop was quite bad considering I had more from my in my first year from the flow hive than I did from, I think it was six hives my second year. So yeah, it was quite strange. And then when I got to the 15 and I had all the losses, it was quite a knock. So really, it's quite a mixed 2020, to be fair.
Interesting to hear about having a higher crop from your flow hive in year one over six colonies hives in year two. I maybe we should come back to that. And a flow hive, and you highlighted how that was better because it didn't have space for extraction. For people thinking about maybe different types of hives, if they were to get into it this year, how do you extract from the flow hive kind of versus the conventional method that most people would know about?
The flow hive is ideal because, although a lot of people don't agree because that goes against traditional methods, the only part that's different is the extracting, and the it's sort of such a design that you put a key in, a long key, and you turn when you turn it, it breaks the cells or it parts the cells, which cracks the cappings, and all the honey runs down to a tube at the bottom. And literally pours out of the super on the top of the honey box. And to me, that was really appealing because there's no mess, there's no extra equipment needed.
I imagine you need to be fairly careful though if you're near a field of oilseed rape.
Ah, yes, yeah, absolutely. Luckily for me, I didn't have that problem. But there are stories where if you don't catch it quick enough, yes, it can crystallize, and you'll find you have a clogged super.
I've spoken to a few people and heard a few talks that they're really well suited for Australia, which is where they originate from, because you got eucalyptus honey, which just flows as easy as anything. But yeah, when you think about what the bees would be foraging on over here, I know you wouldn't necessarily harvest an ivy crop because it's so late in the season. You'd probably want to leave that for the bees. But there's a number of types of honey that could crystallize fairly quickly. So you've got to be quite switched on to make sure you're extracting regularly throughout the season to ensure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is part of the reason you can't if it does crystallize in the frames, you can't leave it on during winter because you risk cracking and damaging your expensive honey super. So yeah, to be fair, is it better with it? I think it maybe costs the same.
For those listening elsewhere, there's definitely options to take your honey if you don't want to do the extraction side of things. Take your super off, take it to someone else, and they can do that bit for you. But I quite enjoy that. It's apart from mopping up the sticky mess that I make all over the kitchen.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's one of the enjoyable parts of the extracting, because in the end you end up with, six, seven, end up with 10 hives, and you end up needing the extracting equipment anyway because you've got the addiction, if you like, because it's quite an addictive hobby.
And then you need to buy a shed to put it all in.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually made a honey room. I'm still it's still under construction, but hopefully, if I have any honey this year, I'll get to use it.
So four colonies at the moment. What's your plan for this season?
I think I need to ensure that they're healthy. I'm not going to try and increase my hive count or anything. I'm just going to take it easy, make sure they're healthy, and yeah, don't exploit them, if you like.
There's definitely a image of getting your hive and you're guaranteed the honey. You talk to a lot of experienced beekeepers, and the advice is in year one, don't expect to get any honey out of them. Often they need to, if you're buying a package, they might be on foundation, which they need to draw out first. Or if you're buying a nuc, a six-row nuc, they've still got another maybe four frames to draw out in the brew box and do quite a lot of work as well. So just manage expectations. It isn't as easy as it might look, and even if you're doing the right thing, you might end up with an outcome which doesn't really stack up relative to the effort and what you've done as a beekeeper. And I think it's a really good conversation to have, because I don't want people thinking, oh, beekeeping guarantees honey, year one, I've got the bees, you know what, it's not going to be an issue. And making sure that, yeah, you stay on top of that feeding is crucial as
Yeah,
well.
absolutely. I think in the beginning, I wanted to in my job as a greenkeeper, we're constantly cutting down forage, available forage, seeing bees sort of fleeing as you approach. We spray weed killer and things, so I was kind of I wanted to help. I still do want to help, obviously, but I think when I started to extract the honey, designed a label, got it, and I got such a sort of rush and buzz from it all that that kind of took over. And that, I think in year two, that kind of was my goal, was to produce honey and sell it, because that was, I lost focus of why I wanted to do beekeeping originally.
It's a good question to keep on asking yourself and asking other people, is why do you actually keep bees? And for your re rationale that you've just given is really interesting, but I think you can be blindsided by, yeah, the honey, and that's what you want to do. But if you're doing it from the environmental perspective and not the honey, then you could manage it in a very different way and not actually harvest much honey at all. And it is interesting when you start challenging people as to what they want to get out of their beekeeping. Given the experiences that you've had, if you were to impart some advice and some lessons learned, what would they be?
I think advice to a new beekeeper or someone thinking about beekeeping is definitely research, and don't stop researching. And don't ever think, oh, I've nailed this, because you get, you know, four or five hives through winter, because you're in for a shock, if you like.
And out of those four colonies, if you do end up taking a honey harvest off them, where and when will people be able to get their hands on some of
I
your honey?
always put a post up on my Instagram, also my Facebook page.
And that is for those
That's
who
the
don't know.
secret beekeeper.
There we go. Yeah, make sure that you head over to Instagram, head to Facebook, have a look for the Secret Beekeeper. I've enjoyed looking through a number of your posts and seeing what's been happening. Yeah, the barrel hive was one that stood out to me. I thought that was really interesting. So, Craig, thinking about this week, the next fortnight, what are your jobs going to be with the bees?
I think this week's too cold, so as soon as the weather allows me, I'm gonna crack the seal and just have a good look through, make a plan, make records. That's another thing that I definitely will, you know, keep on top of in my records. Possibly continuing to finish the honey room.
And cracking the hives open, could that be the start of a weekly inspection from now on if the weather stays warm, or are you keeping that in reserve? Are you just.
No, I will. I'll have to just monitor it. I do have one hive that I'm a little concerned about. You know, you give it the fondant, but when I did look, there wasn't much going on.
I've got one of those as well. With this cold snap, I was strapping the hive up this evening and it definitely felt fairly light. So I'll need to crack that open and have a look at that, see what's happening. It's been really interesting talking to a few of the bee farmers and their approach in terms of balancing colonies out and hives out to make sure that they're at the right sort of population that they want for the various flows. And it's something that I might consider because I've got one colony which is significantly smaller than the other two. So, yeah, there's just so much that you can be doing.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the main goal is to wait until the weather's consistently warm enough, so that I don't. I'm just too concerned about causing more harm than good. So I'm going to wait for consistent weather, open them up, see what's going on, make a plan, And then sort of make my plan from there. But as yet, I don't want to rush into opening the hives up.
Craig, you've had a fairly turbulent journey getting to this stage since 2019. It's been really interesting just hearing about some of those struggles and the challenges that you've had to go through. And up until this point, I think we've probably portrayed a fairly romantic image of beekeeping. And I'm so glad that you agreed to come on and to talk about where you are and your experiences, because it's a real expose on the actual challenges and difficulties that people can face trying to get into this. And if you do have that one colony, then it is tough. And some of the other advice is obviously having two colonies. If you've got two colonies, then you can split them and get back to where you are if you do lose one of them. So I think hopefully people will take a lot away from this and be thinking about actually what am I doing my beekeeping for, especially as we start getting into this warmer weather and people are making their plans and they want to know what the season looks like for them. It's take I my challenge is for people to take a step back, think about what you want to do, what you want to achieve, and why you want to do that, and what's going to be best for the bees.
Yeah, and also though, what I'd done was I rushed. I didn't take. In the first year, I thought I nailed it. I didn't get stung for a long time. I didn't have any mishaps, or it just went really smooth. But rather than, you've got to make sure you understand the bees and what they need. And if you're rushing and you've got too many hives, and you end up flapping and then forgetting your records and stuff, you end up. It's just not good, and it's not what you should be doing. So it's been a lesson for me, a big lesson for me.
Craig, thank you so much for coming and joining me on the podcast today. I really appreciate your time. Thanks again.
No problem at all, and I'm sorry I do waffle on sometimes.
All right, everyone, thanks for taking the time to join me today for the Paddock Bees podcast. I really hope you found it useful. I'd love for you to come back and give me some feedback. So head over to Instagram and send me a direct message, or email me on paddockbees@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you want to hear about. So please don't hesitate to give me your thoughts. Once again, thanks for joining. See you next time. Bye.